Kalen, I'm sorry, she cut him off. Do not apologize. What your brother did, he was not doing to me, he was doing to you. To me? What do you mean? Your brother is jealous of you. Her face softened. He is not stupid, Richard. He knew I was with you, and he was jealous. Richard took her arm and started walking down the road, away from Michael's house. He was furious with Michael, and at the same time he was ashamed of his anger. He felt as if he were letting his father down. That's no excuse. He's first counselor. He has all anyone could want. I'm sorry I didn't put a stop to it. I did not want you to. It was for me to do. What he wants is whatever you have. If you had stopped him, having me would be a contest he would have to win. This way, he has no more interest in me. Besides, what he did to you about your mother was worse. Would you have wanted me to have stepped in on your behalf? Richard put his eyes back to the road. He choked off his anger. No, that was not for you to do. As they walked, the houses became smaller, closer together, but remained clean and well kept. Some of their owners were out taking advantage of the good weather to make repairs before winter. The air was clean and crisp, and Richard knew by the dryness of it that it would be a cold night. The right kind of night for a fire of birch logs, fragrant but not too hot. The white-fenced yards gave way to larger garden plots in front of small cottages set farther back from the road. As he walked, Richard plucked an oak leaf from a branch hanging close to the road. You seem to know a lot about people. You're very perceptive, I mean, about why they do what they do. She shrugged.
I guess.
He tore little pieces off the leaf.
Is that why they hunt you?
She looked over as they walked, and when his eyes came to her, she answered.
They hunt me because they fear truth. One reason I trust you is because you do not.
He smiled at the compliment. He liked the answer, even though he wasn't sure what it meant.
You aren't about to kick me, are you?
A grin came to her face.
You are getting close.
She thought a moment, the smile fading, and went on.
I am sorry, Richard, but for now you must trust me. The more I tell you, the greater the danger to both of us. Still friends?
Still friends. He threw the skeleton of the leaf away. But someday you will tell me all of it? She nodded.
If I can, I promise I will.
Good, he said cheerfully. After all, I am a seeker of truth.
Kalen jerked to a halt, grabbed his shirt sleeve, and spun him to face her wide eyes.
Why did you say that? She demanded.
What? You mean, seeker of truth? That's what Zed calls me. Ever since I was little, he says I always insist on knowing the truth of things, so he calls me seeker of truth.
He was surprised by her agitation. His eyes narrowed.
Why?
She started walking again.
Never mind.
Somehow, he seemed to have broached a sensitive subject. His need to know the answers started to shoulder its way around in his mind. They hunted her because they feared truth, he thought, and she became upset when he said he was a seeker of truth. Maybe she had become upset, he decided, because it made her fear for him, too.
Can you at least tell me who they are, those who hunt you?
She continued to watch the road as she walked next to him. He didn't know if she was going to answer him, but at last she did.
They are the followers of a very wicked man. His name is Darken Rawl. Please, do not ask me any more for now. I do not wish to think of him.
Darken Rawl. So, now he knew the name. The late afternoon sun was behind the hills of the Heartland Woods, allowing the air to cool as they passed through gently rolling hills of hardwood forest. They didn't talk. He didn't care to talk anyway, as his hand was hurting and he was feeling a little dizzy. A bath and a warm bed were what he wanted. Better to give her the bed, he thought. He would sleep in his favorite chair, the one with the squeak. That sounded good, too. It had been a long day, and he ached. By a stand of birch, he turned her up the small trail that would lead past his house. He watched her walking in front of him on the narrow path, picking spiderwebs off her face and arms as she broke the strands strung across their way. Richard was eager to get home.
Along with his knife and the other things he had forgotten to take along, there was something else he had to have, a very important thing his father had given him. His father had made him the guardian of a secret, made him the keeper of a secret book, and had given Richard something to keep always as proof to the true owner of the book that it was not stolen, but rescued for safekeeping. It was a triangular-shaped tooth, 3 fingers wide. Richard had strung a leather thong to it so he could wear it around his neck, but like his knife and backpack, he had stupidly left the house without it. He was impatient to have it back around his neck. Without it, his father would be a thief, just as Michael said. Higher up, after an open area of bare rock, the maples, oaks, and birches began to give way to spruce. The forest floor lost its green for a quiet brown mat of needles. As they walked along, an uneasy feeling began to itch at him. He gently took Galen's sleeve between his thumb and forefinger, pulling her back.
"Let me go first," he said quietly.
She looked at him and obeyed without question. For the next half hour, he slowed the pace, studying the ground and inspecting every branch close to the trail. Richard stopped at the base of the last ridge before his house and squatted them down beside a patch of ferns.
"What's wrong?"
she asked. He shook his head.
"Maybe nothing," he whispered, "but someone has been up the trail this afternoon."
He picked up a flattened pine cone, looking at it for a short time before tossing it away.
"How do you know?"
"Spider webs." He looked up the hill. "There aren't any spider webs across the trail. Someone has been up the trail and broken them. The spiders haven't had time to string more, so there aren't any."
"Does anyone else live up this trail?"
"No. But it could be just a traveler passing through. But this trail isn't used much." Kalen frowned, perplexed.
"When I was walking in front, there were spider webs all over. I was picking them off my face every 10 steps.
"That's what I'm talking about," he whispered. "No one had been up that part of the trail all day, but since the open place we came through, there haven't been any more."
"How could that be?"
He shook his head.
"I don't know. Either someone came out of the woods back by the clearing and then went up the trail, a very hard way to travel."
He looked her in the eyes.
"Or they dropped in out of the sky. My house is over this hill. Let's keep our eyes sharp."
Richard carefully led the two of them up the rise, both scanning the woods as they went. He wanted to run in the other direction, take them away from there, but he couldn't. He wasn't running away without the tooth his father had given him for safekeeping. At the top of the rise, they crouched behind a big pine and looked down on his house. Windows were broken, and the door, which he always locked, stood open. His possessions were scattered about on the ground. Richard stood.
"It's been ransacked, just like my father's house."
She grabbed a fistful of his shirt and hauled him back down.
"Richard," she whispered angrily, "your father may have come home just like this. Maybe he went in just like you were about to do, and they were waiting for him."
She was right, of course. He ran his fingers through his hair, thinking. He looked back toward the house. Its back sat hard up against the woods with its door facing the clearing. Since it was the only door, anyone inside would expect him to come running in that way. That's where they would wait, if they were inside.
"All right," he whispered back. "But there's something inside I have to get. I'm not leaving without it. We can sneak around the back. I'll get it, and then we will be away from here."
Richard would have preferred not to take her, but he didn't want to leave her waiting on the trail alone. They made their way through the woods, through the tangle of brush, skirting the house, giving it a wide berth. When he reached the place where he would have to approach the back of the house, he motioned her to wait. She didn't like the idea, but he would take no argument. If there was anyone in there, he didn't want them getting her as well. Leaving Kalen under a spruce tree, Richard started cautiously toward the house, following a serpentine route, to stay on the areas of soft needles instead of treading on dry leaves. When he finally saw the back bedroom window, he stood frozen, listening. He heard no sound. Carefully, his heart pounding, he took slow, crouched steps. There was movement at his feet. A snake wriggled past his foot. He waited for it to pass. At the weathered back of his house, he gently put his hand on the bare wooden frame of the window and raised his head high enough to look inside. Most of the glass was broken out, and he could see that his bedroom was a mess. The bedding was slashed open, prized books were torn apart, and their pages strewn about the floor. To the far side of the room, the door to the front room was opened part way, but not enough to see beyond. Without a wedge under it, that was the spot the door always swung to on its own. Slowly, he put his head in the window and looked down at his bed. Below the window was the bottom bedpost, and hanging from it were his pack and the leather thong with the tooth, right where he had left them. He brought his arm up and started to reach through the window. There was a squeak from the front room, a squeak he knew well. He went cold with fright. It was the squeak his chair made. He had never fixed the squeak because it seemed a part of the chair's personality, and he couldn't bring himself to alter it. Soundlessly, he dropped back down. There could be no doubt someone was in the front room, sitting in his chair, waiting for him. Something caught his eye, making him look to the right. A squirrel sat on a rotting stump, watching him. "Please," he thought desperately to himself, "please don't start chattering to me to leave your territory." The squirrel watched him for a long moment, then jumped off the stump to a tree, scurried up, and was gone. Richard let out his breath and raised himself back up to look in the window again. The door still stood as it had before. Quickly, he reached inside and carefully lifted the pack and leather thong with the tooth off the bedpost, listening wide-eyed all the time for the slightest sound from beyond the door. His knife was on a small table on the other side of the bed. There was no chance of retrieving it. He lifted the pack through the window, being careful not to let it bump against any of the remaining shards of broken glass. With his booty in hand, Richard moved quickly but silently back the way he had come, resisting a strong urge to break into a run. He looked over his shoulder as he went, to be sure no one followed. He put his head through the loop of leather and tucked the tooth into his shirt. He never let anyone see the tooth. It was only for the keeper of the secret book to see. Kaylin waited where he had left her. When she saw him, she sprang to her feet. He crossed his lips with his finger to let her know to keep silent. Slinging the pack over his left shoulder, he put his other hand gently on her back to move her along. Not wanting to go back the way they had come, he guided her through the woods to where the trail continued above his house. Spiderwebs strung across the trail glistened in the last rays of the setting sun, and they both breathed out in relief. This trail was longer and much more arduous, but it led where he was going, to Zed. The old man's house was too far to reach before dark, and the trail was too treacherous to travel at night, but he wanted to put as much distance as he could between them and whomever waited back at his house. While there was light, they would keep moving. Coldly, he wondered if whoever was in his house could be the same person who had murdered his father. His house was torn up, just like his father's had been. Could they have been waiting for him as they had waited for his father? Could it be the same person? Richard wished he could have confronted him, or at least seen who it was, but something inside him had strongly warned him to get away. He gave himself a mental shake. He was letting his imagination have too free a rein. Of course something inside had warned him of danger, warned him to get away. He had already gotten away with his life when he shouldn't have once this day. It was foolish to trust in luck once. Twice was arrogance of the worst kind. It was best to walk away. Still, he wished he could have seen who it was, been sure there was no connection. Why would someone tear his house apart, as his father's had been torn apart? What if it was the same person? He wanted to know who had killed his father. He burned to know. Even though he had not been allowed to see his father's body at his house, he had wanted to know how he was killed. Chase had told him, very gently, but he had told him. His father's belly had been cut open, and his guts had been spread out all over the floor. How could anyone do that? Why would anyone do that? It made him sick and lightheaded to think of it again. Richard swallowed back the lump in his throat.
Well?
Her voice jolted him out of his thoughts. What?
Well, what?
Well, did you get whatever it was you went to get?
Yes. So what was it?
What was it? It was my backpack. I had to get my backpack.
She turned to face him with both hands on her hips and a scowl on her face.
Richard Cipher, you expect me to believe you risked your life to get your backpack?
Kalen, you are coming close to getting kicked. He couldn't manage a smile.
Her head was cocked to the side, and she continued to give him a sideways look, but his remark had taken the fire out of her.
Fair enough, my friend, she said gently. Fair enough.
He could tell Kalen was a person who was used to getting answers when she asked a question. As the light faded and colors muted into grayness, Richard started thinking of places to spend the night. He knew of several wayward pines along the way that he had used on many occasions. There was one at the edge of a clearing just off the trail ahead. He could see the tall tree standing out against the fading pinks of the sky, standing above all the other trees. He led Kalen off the trail toward it. The tooth hanging around his neck nagged at him. His secrets nagged at him. He wished his father had never made him the keeper of the secret book. A thought that had occurred to him back at his house, but he had ignored, forced itself to the front of his mind. The books at his house looked like they had been torn apart in a rage. Maybe because none was the right book. What if it was the secret book they were looking for? But that was impossible. No one but the true owner even knew of the book. And his father, and himself, and the thing the tooth came from. The thought was too far-fetched to consider, so he decided he wouldn't. He tried very hard not to. Fear from what had happened on Blunt Cliff and from what had been waiting for him at his house seemed to have sapped his strength. His feet felt almost too heavy to lift as he trudged across the mossy ground. Just before he went through the brush into the clearing, he stopped to swat a fly that was biting his neck. Kalen grabbed his wrist in mid-swat. Her other hand clamped over his mouth. He went rigid. Looking into his eyes, she shook her head, then released his wrist, putting the hand behind his head while continuing to keep her other hand over his mouth. By the expression on her face, he knew she was terrified he would make a sound. She slowly lowered him to the ground, and by his cooperation, he let her know he would obey. Her eyes held him as hard as her hands. Continuing to watch his eyes, she put her face so close to his he could feel the warmth of her breath on his cheek.
Listen to me.
Her whisper was so low he had to concentrate to hear her.
Do exactly as I say.
The expression on her face made him afraid to blink.
Do not move. No matter what happens, do not move, or we are dead.
She waited. He gave a small nod.
Let the flies bite. Or we are dead.
She waited again. He gave another small nod. With a flick of her eyes, she indicated for him to look across the clearing. He slowly moved his head just a little so he could see. There was nothing. She kept her hand over his mouth. He heard a few grunts like a wild boar. Then he saw it. He flinched involuntarily. She clamped her hand harder against his mouth. From across the clearing, fading evening light reflected in two glowing green eyes as their gaze swept in his direction. It stood on 2 feet, like a man, and was about a head taller than him. He guessed it weighed 3 times as much. Flies bit his neck, but he tried to ignore them. He looked back to her eyes. She had not looked to the beast. She knew what waited across the clearing. Instead, she continued to watch him, waiting to see if he would react in a way that would betray them. He nodded again to reassure her. Only then did she remove her hand from his mouth and put it over his wrist, holding it to the ground. Trickles of blood ran across her neck as she lay motionless on the soft moss, letting the flies bite. He could feel each sharp sting as they bit his neck. Grunts came short and low, and both turned their heads slightly to see. With astonishing speed, it charged into the center of the clearing, moving in a shuffling, sideways motion. It grunted as it came. Glowing green eyes searched while its long tail slowly swished the air. The beast cocked its head to the side and pricked its short, rounded ears ahead, listening. Fur covered the great body everywhere except its chest and stomach, which were covered with a smooth, glossy, pinkish skin that rippled with corded muscles underneath. Flies buzzed around something smeared over the taut skin. Throwing back its head, the beast opened its mouth, hissing into the cold night air. Richard could see the hot breath turning to vapor between teeth as big as his fingers. To keep from shrieking in terror, Richard concentrated on the pain of the biting flies. They could not sneak away or run. The thing was that close and, he knew, that fast. A scream erupted from the ground right in front of them, making Richard flinch. Instantly, the beast charged toward the two of them in a sideways run. Kaelin's fingers dug into his wrist, but otherwise she didn't move. Richard was paralyzed as he saw it pounce. A rabbit, its ears covered with the flies, bolted right in front of them, screaming again, and was swept up and torn in half in a blink. The front half went down in one swallow. The beast stood right over them and tore at the insides of the rabbit, taking some of the gore and smearing it on its pink-skinned chest and stomach.
The flies, even the ones biting Richard's and Kaelin's necks, returned to the creature to feast.
The rest of the rabbit was taken by each hind leg, ripped in half, and eaten. When done, the beast cocked its head again, listening. The two of them were right underneath it, both holding their breath. Richard wanted to scream. Large wings spread from its back. Against the failing light, Richard could see the veins pulsing through the thin membranes that were its wings. The beast took one last look around and skittered sideways across the clearing. It straightened, hopped twice, and flew off, disappearing in the direction of the boundary. The flies were gone with it. Both flopped onto their backs, breathing fast, exhausted by the level of fright. Richard thought of the country people who had told him of things from the sky that ate people. He hadn't believed them. He believed them now. Something in his pack was poking him in the back, and when he could stand it no longer, he rolled onto his side, propping himself up on one elbow. He was drenched in sweat, and it now felt like ice in the cold evening air.
Kaelin still lay on her back with her eyes closed, breathing rapidly.
A few strands of her hair stuck to her face, but most of it flowed out over the ground. Sweat covered her, too. Around her neck, it was tinted red. He felt an overwhelming sense of sadness for her, for the terrors in her life. He wished she didn't have to face the monsters she seemed to know all too well.
Kaelin, what was that thing?
She sat up, taking a deep breath as she looked down at him. Her hand came up and hooked some of her hair behind her ear. The rest fell forward over her shoulders.
It was a long-tailed gar.
Reaching out, she picked up one of the biting flies by its wings. Somehow it must have gotten caught in a fold of his shirt and was smashed when he flopped onto his back.
This is a blood fly. Gars use them to hunt. The flies flush out the quarry. The gar grabs it. They smear some on themselves for the flies.
We are very lucky.
She held the blood fly right in front of his nose to make her point.
Long-tailed gars are stupid. If it had been a short-tailed gar, we would be dead right now. Short-tailed gars are bigger and a lot smarter.
She paused to make sure she had his full attention.
They count their flies.
He was frightened, exhausted, confused, and in pain. He wanted this nightmare to end. With a moan of frustration, he sagged back down onto his back, not caring any more about whatever it was that was poking him.
Kaelin, I'm your friend.
After those men attacked us and you didn't want to tell me more about what is going on, I didn't press you.
His eyes were closed. He couldn't bear the scrutiny of her eyes. Now someone is after me, too. For all I know, it could be the same person who murdered my father. It's not just you anymore. I can't go home either. I think I have a right to know at least some of what's going on. I'm your friend, not your enemy.
Once, when I was little, I got a fever and almost died. Zed found a route that saved me. Until today, that was the only time I've ever been close to death. Today, I was close 3 times. What do I...
Her fingertips touched his lips to silence him.
You're right. I will answer your questions, except about me. For now, I cannot.
He sat up and looked at her. She was starting to shake with cold. Shrugging the straps of the pack off his shoulders, he pulled a blanket out and wrapped it around her.
You promised me a fire, she said as she shivered. Is it a promise you intend to keep?
He couldn't help but to laugh as he got to his feet.
Sure.
There's a wayward pine right over there on the other side of the clearing. Or, if you want, there are others up the trail a little way.
She looked up and gave him a worried frown.
Right, he smiled. We'll find another wayward pine up the trail.
What is a wayward pine? She asked.
Chapter 5. Richard held back the boughs of the tree. This is a wayward pine, he announced. Friend to any traveler.
It was dark inside. Kalin held the boughs aside so he could see by the moonlight to strike steel to flint and start a fire. Clouds scudded across the moon, and they could see their breath in the cold air. Richard had stayed here before on trips to and from Zed's and had made a small fire pit of stones. There was dry wood, and to the far side a stack of dry grass he had used for bedding. Since he didn't have his knife, he was thankful he had left a supply of tinder. The fire was quickly started, filling the interior of the tree's skirt with flickering light. Richard was not quite able to stand under the branches where they began growing out from the trunk. The branches were bare near the trunk, with needles on the ends, leaving a hollow interior. The lower branches dipped all the way to the ground. The tree was fire-resistant as long as one was careful. The smoke from the small fire curled up the center, near the trunk. The needles grew so thick that even in a good rain it remained dry inside. Richard had waded out many a rain in a wayward pine. He always enjoyed staying in the small but cozy shelters as he traveled the heartland. Now, he was especially glad for its concealing shelter. Before their encounter with the long-tailed Gar, there had been plants and animals in the forest he had strong respect for, but there had been nothing in the woods he feared. Kalin sat herself down, cross-legged, in front of the fire. She was still shivering and kept the blanket over her head formed into a hood and held tightly up around her chin.
I never heard of wayward pines before. I am not used to staying in the woods when I travel, but they look like a wonderful place to sleep.
She looked even more tired than he.
When was the last time you slept? 2 days ago, I think. It has all become a blur.
Richard was surprised she could keep her eyes open. When they were running from the quad, he had barely been able to keep up with her. It was her fear that pushed her on, he knew. Why so long?
It would be very unwise, she said, to go to sleep in the boundary.
Kalin watched the fire, spellbound in its warm embrace, the light from it fluttering on her face.
She loosened the blanket from around her chin and let it hang so she could put her hands out to warm them closer to the fire. A chill ran through him when he wondered what was in the boundary and what would happen if you went to sleep there.
Hungry?
She nodded her head. Richard dug around in his pack, retrieving a pot, and went outside to fill it in a pool of water at a small brook they had passed a short distance back. Sounds of the night filled air so cold it felt as if it might break if he wasn't careful. Once again he cursed himself for leaving home without his forest cloak, among other things. The memory of what had been waiting for him at his house made him shiver all the more. Every bug that looped past him made him recoil in fear it was a blood fly, and several times he froze in mid-step,
only to exhale in relief when he saw it was only a snowy tree cricket, or a moth, or a lace wing. Shadows melted and materialized as clouds passed in front of the moon. He didn't want to, but he looked up anyway. Stars winked off and back on as soft, gauze-like clouds moved silently across the sky. All except one, which did not move. He came back in, cold to the bone, and put the pot of water on the fire, balancing it on three stones. Richard started to sit across from her, but then changed his mind and sat next to her, telling himself it was because he was so cold. When she heard his teeth chattering, she put half the blanket around his shoulders, letting her half slip from her head down to her shoulders as well. The blanket, heated by her body, felt good around him, and he sat quietly letting the warmth soak in. "I've never seen anything like a gar. The Midlands must be a dreadful place."
"There are many dangers in the Midlands." A wistful smile came over her face. "There are also many fantastic and magical things. It is a beautiful, wondrous place. But the gar are not from the Midlands. They are from Dahara."
He stared in astonishment. "Dahara? From across the second boundary?"
Dahara.
Until his brother's speech today, he had never heard the name spoken in anything other than the cautious whispers of older people, or in a curse.
Kaelin continued to watch the fire.
"Richard,"
she paused as if afraid to tell him the rest.
"There is no longer a second boundary. The boundary between the Midlands and Dahara is down since the spring."
That shock made him feel as if the shadowy Dahara had just taken a frightening, giant leap closer. He struggled to make sense of the things he was learning. "Maybe my brother is more of a prophet than he knows."
"Maybe,"
she said noncommittally. Although it would be hard to make a living as a prophet by predicting events that had already taken place. He gave her a sidelong glance.
Kaelin smiled as she idly twisted a strand of hair.
"When I first saw you, my thought was that you were no fool."
Firelight sparkled in her green eyes.
"Thank you for not proving me wrong."
"Michael is in a position to have knowledge others don't. Maybe he's trying to prepare the people, get them used to the idea, so when they find out, they won't panic."
Michael often said that information was the coin of power, and that it was not a coin to be spent frivolously. After he had become a counselor, he encouraged people to bring their information to him first. Even a farmer with a tale received an ear, and if the tale proved true, a favor. The water was starting to boil. Richard leaned over, hooked his finger through a strap, and pulled his pack to him, then rearranged the blanket. Rummaging around, he located the pouch of dried vegetables and poured some into the pot. From his pocket, he pulled a napkin that held four fat sausages, which he broke up and tossed into the soup pot.
Kaelin looked surprised.
"Where did those come from? Did you snatch those from your brother's party?"
Her voice carried a tone of disapproval.
"A good woodsman," he said, licking his fingers and looking up at her, "always plans ahead and tries to know where his next meal will come from."
"He will not think much of your manners."
"I do not think much of his."
He knew he would get no argument from her on that point.
"Kaelin, I won't justify the way he acted. Ever since our mother died, he's been a hard person to be close to. But I know he cares about people. You have to, if you want to be a good counselor. It must be a lot of pressure. I certainly wouldn't want the responsibility, but that's all he ever wanted, to be someone important. And now that he's first counselor, he has what he's always wanted. He should be satisfied, but he seems even less tolerant. He's always busy and always snapping orders. He is always in a bad mood lately. Maybe when he got what he wanted, it wasn't what he thought it would be. I wish he could be more like he used to be."
She grinned.
"At least you had the good sense to pick the best of the sausages."
That eased the tension. They both laughed.
"Kaelin, I don't understand about the boundary, I mean. I don't even know what the boundary is, except it's meant to keep the land separated so there will be peace. And of course, everyone knows that whoever goes into the boundary will not come out alive. Chase and the boundary wardens patrol to make sure people stay away for their own good.
Young people here are not taught the histories of the three lands?
No. I always thought it odd myself, because I wanted to know, but no one would ever tell me much. People think I'm strange because I want to know, and I ask questions. Older people seem suspicious when I ask, and tell me it was too long ago to remember, or give some other excuse. Both my father and Zed told me they used to live in the Midlands before the boundary. Before it went up, they came to Westland. They met here before I was born. They said that back before the boundaries was a terrible time, and that there was a lot of fighting. They both told me there was nothing I needed to know except it was a dreadful time, best forgotten. Zed always seemed the most bitter about it.
Kaelin snapped a piece off a dry stick and tossed it into the fire, where it flamed into a bright ember.
Well, it is a long story. If you want, I will tell you some of it.
When she turned to him, he nodded for her to go on.
Long ago, back in the time before our parents were born, Tahara was just a confederation of kingdoms, as was the Midlands. The most ruthless of the Daharan rulers was Panas Ral. He was avaricious. From the first day of his reign, he started swallowing up all of Dahara for himself, one kingdom after another, many times before the ink was dry on a peace treaty. In the end, he held sway over all of Dahara. But instead of satisfying him, it only whetted his appetite, and he soon turned his attention to the lands that are now the Midlands. The Midlands is a loose confederation of free lands, free, at least, to rule as they see fit, and only so long as they live in peace with each other. By the time Ral had conquered all of Dahara, the peoples of the Midlands had seen what he was about, and were not to be taken so easily. They knew that signing a peace treaty with him was as good as signing an invitation to invasion. Instead, they chose to remain free and joined together through the Council of the Midlands in a common defense. Many of the freelands held no favor with each other, but they knew that if they did not fight together, they would die separately, one at a time. Panas Ral threw the might of Dahara against them. War raged for many years.
Kaelin broke off another piece of the stick and fed it to the fire.
As his legions were finally slowed and then halted, Ral turned to magic. There is magic in Dahara, too, not just in the Midlands. Back then, there was magic everywhere. There were no separate lands, no boundaries. Anyway, Panas Ral was ruthless in his use of magic against the free people. He was terribly brutal.
What kind of magic? What did he do?
Some was trickery, sickness, fevers. But the worst of it was the shadow people.
Richard frowned.
Shadow people? What were they?
Shadows in the air. Shadow people had no solid form, no precise shape. They were not even alive as we know it, but beings created out of magic.
She held out her hand, gliding it across in front of them.
They would come floating across a field or through a wood. Weapons had no effect on them. Swords and arrows went through them as if they were nothing more than smoke. You couldn't hide. Shadow people could see you anywhere. One would drift right up to a person and touch him. The touch caused the person's whole body to blister and swell and finally split open. No one touched by a shadow person ever survived. Whole battalions were found, killed, to a man.
She pulled her hand back inside the blanket.
When Panas Ral started using the magic in that way, a great and honorable wizard joined the side of the Midlands cause.
What was his name, this great and honorable wizard?
That is part of the story. Have patience until I get to it.
Richard stirred some spices into the soup, listening intently while she resumed her story.
Many thousands had already died in battle, but the magic killed many more. It was a dark time, after all those years of struggle, to have so many taken by the magic Ral called forth. But with the help of the great wizard holding Panas Ral's magic in check, his legions were driven back into Dahara.
Richard added a stick of birch to the fire.
How did this great and honorable wizard stop the shadow people?
He conjured up battle horns for the armies. When the shadow people came, Our men blew the horns, and magic swept the shadow people away like smoke in the wind. It turned the course of battle to our side. The wars had been devastating, but it was concluded that going into Dahara to destroy Rahl and his forces would be too costly. Yet something had to be done to keep Panis Rahl from trying again, as they knew he would, and many were more frightened of the magic than of the hordes from Dahara, and they wanted to have nothing to do with it ever again. They wanted a place to live where there would be no magic. Westland was set aside for those people. So it was that there came to be three lands. The boundaries were created with the help of magic, but they themselves are not magic. Richard watched as she looked away. So what are they? Even though her head was turned, he could see her eyes close for a moment. She took the spoon from him and tasted the soup, which he knew wasn't ready yet, then looked to him as if asking if he really wanted to know. Richard waited.
Kaelin stared into the fire.
The boundaries are part of the underworld, the dominion of the dead. They were conjured into our world by magic to separate the three lands. They are like a curtain drawn across our world, a rift in the world of the living.
You mean that going into the boundary is, what, like falling through a crack into another world? Into the underworld?
She shook her head. No, our world is still here. The underworld is there in the same place at the same time. It is about a 2-day walk across the land where the boundary, the underworld, lies. But while you are walking the land where the boundary is, you are also walking through the underworld. It is a wasteland. Any life that touches the underworld or is touched by it is touching death. That is why no one can cross the boundary. If you enter it, you enter the land of the dead. No one can return from the dead.
Then how did you?
She swallowed as she watched the fire. With magic. The boundary was brought here with magic, so the wizards reasoned they could get me safely through with the aid and protection of magic. It was frightfully difficult for them to cast the spells. They were dealing in things they didn't fully understand, dangerous things, and they weren't the ones who conjured the boundary into this world, so they weren't sure it would work. None of us knew what to expect. Her voice was weak, distant. Even though I came through, I fear I will never be able to entirely leave it. Richard sat spellbound. He was horrified to think that she had faced that she had gone through a part of the underworld, the world of the dead, even with the aid of magic. It was unimaginable. Her frightened eyes came to his, eyes that had seen things no one else had ever seen.
"Tell me what you saw there," he whispered.
Her skin was ashen as she looked back into the fire. A birch twig popped, making her flinch. Her lower lip began to quiver, and her eyes filled with tears that reflected the flickering flames, but she was not seeing the fire.
"At first," she said in a distant tone, "it was like walking into the sheets of cold fire you see at night in the northern sky."
Her chest began heaving.
"Inside, it is beyond darkness."
Her eyes were wide, wet. A small moan escaped with her breath.
"There is someone with me."
She turned to him, confused, seeming not to know where she was. It panicked him to see the pain in her eyes, pain he brought there with his question. She put her hand over her mouth as tears rolled down her cheeks. Her eyes closed as she gave a low, mournful cry. Bumps ran up Richard's arms.
"My mother," she sobbed. "I haven't seen her in so many years. And my dead sister, Denis. I'm so alone and afraid."
As she cried, she started gasping for air. Somehow he was losing her to the powerful specters of what she had seen in the underworld, as if they were pulling her back to drown her. Frantic, Richard put his hands on her shoulders and twisted her to face him. "Kaelin, look at me! Look at me!"
"Denis,"
she gasped, her chest heaving as she tried to break free of him. "Kaelin!"
"I'm so alone and afraid."
"Kaelin, I'm here with you! Look at me!" She continued to cry convulsively, choking for air. Her eyes open, but they didn't focus on him. They were looking into another place.
You're not alone. I'm here with you. I won't leave you.
I'm so alone,
she wailed. He shook her, trying to make her listen. Her skin was white and dead cold. She struggled to breathe.
I'm right here. You're not alone.
Desperate, he shook her again, but it wasn't helping. He was losing her. Struggling to control his rising panic, Richard did the only thing he could think of. When he had been confronted with fear in the past, he had learned to control it. There was strength in control.